today is Munoz de Real against Holder.
If it pleases the court, Patricia Vargas on behalf of the appellant.
Please wait until your name is called. Ms. Vargas.
Yes. If it pleases the court, Patricia Vargas, I'm
Ms. Vargas, will you please stand at the podium and speak directly into the microphones?
Thank you, Your Honor.
You can lower the podium if you want. There's a switch on the right-hand side. No, don't move the microphone. There's a switch on the right-hand side of the podium.
Inside? It's fine.
No, the other side of the rocker will move it down. On the right-hand side of the podium, it's just one switch. You've already found it.
Okay. That's fine, Your Honor. I'll just scream over the microphone. Your Honor, this case is before
the... Counsel, you need to speak into the microphone, not into your papers.
We're having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Your Honor, this matter comes
before
this court.
Counsel, you need to speak into the microphone, not into your papers.
This matter comes before this court with a petition to review the Board of Immigration's finding in this court denying the appellant's right to a motion to reopen his case after he had been removed from the United States. Mr. Munoz, the appellant, first entered the United States at the age of 4 and became a permanent resident in 1986. The issue was whether the post-departure bar prohibits him from obtaining any relief in the form of a motion to reopen.
Counsel, why does this matter? I understand that it's an interesting legal question. But there's also the statutory rule that the motion for reconsideration must be filed within 90 days, and even a lawyer knows that 6 years is more than 90 days.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, we are arguing that there was ineffective assistance of counsel, and therefore that time period should be told.
Well, look, ineffective assistance of counsel before the immigration judge doesn't explain a 6-year delay in asking for the Board of Immigration Appeals review. Is it your position that the lawyer was providing ineffective assistance for 6 years running? I thought your position was that ineffective assistance was provided before the immigration judge, and then the lawyer kind of slunk away into the woodwork. And if that's the correct understanding, there's no excuse for taking more than 90 days to seek reconsideration.
Your Honor, the lawyer continued to represent Mr. Munoz 6 years after the decision was rendered by the immigration court. In that essence, she filed in 2006 an I-130 application on behalf of the appellant to immigrate him through his now U.S. citizen mother. The mother was in constant contact with the attorney requesting information as to the status of her son, who was in Mexico. Never did the attorney advise her of this court's holding in Barzón Reyes.
You see, that concept would just make all statutes of limitations vanish. I can't understand an argument that statutes of limitations just don't work. As long as you got a bad lawyer, any period of time in the statute should be ignored.
That's not the position of the appellant, Your Honor. The appellant is saying that this resulted in a gross injustice. To him, he's an LPR.
You know, by the way, that we, about 2 years ago, denied a petition for a writ of habeas corpus in a capital case because a lawyer, because of his incompetence, filed the petition one day late? What we said is that a lawyer's incompetence, as a matter of law, does not justify tolling a statute of limitations.
I believe that in this instance it does, Your Honor. Here you have a man who was an LPR, relied on the representations of his attorney, and claimed to be an expert in immigration law, and failed to advise him of the very ruling of this court in Barzón Reyes, which eliminated the basis of his removal.
Well, he certainly couldn't have advised him of that decision, which wasn't rendered until many months after the immigration judge's decision.
It would have been within the 90-day period. He was ordered deported on April 11th, and this court rendered its decision on July 7th, I believe. So had the attorney advised the family that this court had rendered that decision, a motion to reopen could have been immediately filed. because it's the Board of Immigration Appeals in the matter of Estrada held that where an LPR status is at issue, a temporary departure and even a substantial departure from the United States does not keep the person availability of a motion to reopen. Even further, the fact is that in order for the departure bar to be effective, it must be valid. It's the appellant's position that it is an invalid agency rule. The statute which rules, and it's at 8 U.S.C. 1229 AC7A, clearly states that an alien has the right to one motion to reopen. It doesn't make any geographical limitations, although it does limit, as the court correctly pointed out, when a motion to reopen must be filed. Further, to support that...
See, that's my problem. You want us to say that unless there are limitations in the statute, the board can't make any up. But there are real limits in this statute, the 90-day rule, which in turn you want us to ignore. You want the board to ignore it. You want us to ignore it. The statute not only says that 90 days is, the statute says that 90 days is the norm, except in asylum cases where there's a year. And for asylum cases, for exceptional circumstances, if the person is ill or in prison, the board can allow a time longer than a year. Now, what that implies to me is that except in asylum cases, the board, 90 days is the limit. And if there were any tolling doctrine, it would be limited, as the statute says, to exceptional circumstances. And the statute defines that as illness or being in prison.
I believe the court has also defined it as a gross miscarriage of justice. And I believe that's what you have in this instant case. The attorney failed to properly advise the appellant of his rights, his right to reserve his appeal, his right to move for a motion to reopen. Certainly the consequences and the prejudice is clear on his face. The man has been outside of the country for over 7 years.
The prejudice in the AEDPA case I mentioned was that the client was executed.
In addition, the appellant was a permanent resident. This court in Bason Reyes invalidated the basis for his removal. It found that operating a vehicle while under the influence of the prior was not an aggravated felony. Therefore, there is the basis for his removal has been nullified by the court. You have nothing further, Your Honor.
Very much, counsel. Ms. Skadron. Justice Scalia and Brian Garner say that one thing all appellate lawyers should do when they enter a new courtroom is figure out how the switch on the podium works.
That's a wise thing. Good morning, Your Honor. Terry Skadron, representing the Attorney General in this case. This case involves an alien who conceded removability in light of controlling law at the time of his immigration court proceeding. He sought no relief, and he waived the opportunity of appeal to the board. He was removed shortly after his proceeding, and 6 years later sought to reopen his case, arguing that an intervening change of law post his removal rendered his original order a nullity. Now, the board, or the immigration court, affirmed by the board, applied a 50-year-old regulation which has been consistently interpreted by the board as foreclosing immigration court jurisdiction after an alien's departure from the United States. We submit that the court should sustain that determination that the board's interpretation, which is now set forth in its precedent decision in Armendaros, promotes strong federal interests in finality of proceedings. Further, it recognizes the limits of the authority of immigration courts within the greater immigration system. Post-departure, the responsibility for the admission of aliens lies with the agencies which are charged with border security responsibilities. Those agencies are the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of State. Once an alien has been removed, as the board held in Armendaros, he literally is beyond the court's aid.
Counsel, I don't understand the significance of the fact that the board's view is 50 years old. Until the 1996 amendments, there was statutory support for the proposition that when an alien left the country, all forms of review of the deportation order were over. The 1996 statute changed that. An alien can now seek judicial review of a removal order after the alien has complied with the order and left, taken voluntary departure, for example. It's still permissible to review. Why doesn't that bear on our understanding of whether the alien, in addition to seeking judicial review, can ask for the board's review?
Well, Your Honor, the board addressed this in Armendaros. The Tenth Circuit also addressed that same question in Rosilla Puga. Our response is that there is a vast difference between judicial review and administrative review. And we recognize that in ARERA in 1996.
If you would just, private acronyms don't help, especially when they sound like efforts to start a car whose battery is run down.
Okay. Okay, in 1996, Congress made major changes to the judicial review provisions of the INA. Among other things, Congress repealed, as the court is pointing out, the provision that divested federal courts of jurisdiction to review petitions for review after an alien's departure. So today, yes, federal courts can review a removal order post-departure. At the same time that Congress made those 1996 changes to the Act, it also repealed a provision that provided for an automatic stay of removal upon filing a petition for review. So the whole thrust of the new law with respect to federal courts was that the alien was to be promptly removed. And that
one might think that one of the fundamental changes made in 96 was go now, litigate later.
Exactly.
And one would think that that includes go now, you know, use all of your remedies later, not simply remedies in court, but remedies before the board.
Go now, litigate later certainly applies to judicial review. That gets the alien out of the United States, out of detention, and facilitates execution of orders. With respect to board review, though, unlike a petition for review, a motion to reopen is disfavored. With judicial review, Congress reasonably could have found that the alien misses his one chance.
Counsel, let me tell you my problem with this. There are two kinds of things the board might say. One is it could promulgate a regulation or issue a decision saying, once the alien is out of the country, we lose jurisdiction to consider reopening. The other kind of thing the board could say is, once the alien leaves the country, we're going to exercise our discretion against him as a matter of prudence. The board seems to have said the former thing rather than the latter thing. And one of the things that worries me about the board's position is not only this change in practice in 96 with respect to judicial review, but also cases like Union Pacific Railroad against Locomotive Engineers, in which the Supreme Court last month said that no administrative agency can contract the scope of its own jurisdiction by regulation. So the board seems to be doing something that Union Pacific says agencies can't do.
Well, Your Honor, I would turn the court to the canon of construction that when Congress revisits a statute and makes substantial change and leaves untouched a provision such as the departure bar regulation,
Surely you're not arguing that whenever Congress amends a statute, it has approved every one of the 53,647 regulations that it doesn't specifically mention. I can sort of understand the argument, which the Supreme Court sometimes says, that when Congress substantially amends a statute and leaves a given part intact, it leaves the Supreme Court's interpretation of something intact. But the proposition that by amending the statute wholesale in 1996, Congress approved the entire contents of the Code of Federal Regulations is impossible to swallow.
Well, Your Honor, I would grant you that. Nonetheless, at most we have an ambiguity here, an ambiguity in the statute as amended by Congress in 1996. And the question is, was the board's interpretation of the statute post the 96 amendments, was it reasonable? Was it permissible? And we submit that it was. As the Tenth Circuit has found, it would be inconceivable for Congress to, by negative inference, repeal a provision that had been in place and consistently interpreted for 50 years without a single comment in the legislative history, without a single reference to administrative post-departure review in the statute. The agency visited after the 96 amendments, the agency considered whether the departure bar remained intact and affirmatively determined that not been repealed.
Which way did it put it? Did it say, we lack jurisdiction in the sense that we are powerless no matter how strongly persuaded we might be that X is a good thing? Or did it say, we are convinced that we should not grant such motions for reopening and we ain't going to do it?
Well, the board squarely held in Armendariz that it lacked jurisdiction.
Yeah. Well, is there any way that can be reconciled with the Supreme Court's view in Union Pacific against Locomotive Engineers and similar cases?
Your Honor, the board's restriction and the regulations restriction on the board jurisdiction had been in place before the statute was amended. And therefore, I believe it is consistent.
Are you acquainted with the Union Pacific case?
I have not read it specifically.
Trying to filibuster in response to a judge's question is not a successful strategy. I asked you a question about a particular case. The answer, I don't know that case, is a perfectly permissible answer. Trying to avoid the question by talking whereof you know not is not a satisfactory strategy.
Granted, Your Honor. But the proposition that an agency cannot enlarge its own jurisdiction is one that...
No, the proposition in Union Pacific is that it cannot contract its own jurisdiction. That's why this is very similar to what the board has tried to do here.
The question, as
so
we
as
would...
I say, you don't know the case, so don't bother trying to talk about it.
Yes, Your Honor. But the question, as we would submit it, is a Chevron deference question. The question is whether the agency's construction is permissible. Now, there are two cases that help the petitioner, the Ninth Circuit's Lynn decision, the Fourth Circuit's decision in William, both predated the board's precedent decision in Armendariz. So they didn't have the benefit of the board's reasoning in those cases. After issuance of Armendariz, courts have consistently upheld the regulation, and we submit that the court should do the same here. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Vargas, anything further?
In reference to Chevron and deference being given to the agency, that is done only when there is some ambiguity or lack of clarity within the statute itself. The statute is very clear in its language. It states simply that the alien has the right to one motion to reopen and one motion to reconsider. It doesn't put any geographic limitations on that right. It does not indicate that if he's outside of the country.
The Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 4B is invalid.
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that.
The reason I ask that question is because there are a lot of statutes of the form, somebody has a right to do something. There's a statute that says somebody has a right to file a notice of appeal in a criminal case. Rule 4B attaches a lot of conditions to that. One condition, for example, is that it has to be filed within 10 days. It has to be filed from a final decision. And judges have added more conditions, like the defendant can't be a fugitive from justice. On your understanding, whenever there's a statute that says a litigant can do X, no one else can put any conditions on the doing of X. And I wonder, it seems to me that would not only take out Rule 4B, but a whole lot of rules that place conditions on the doing of things that you, by statute, can do.
Your Honor, but the Congress did address this issue. It's not as if the Congress was silent and it chose not to address the issue. I understand what the Court's concern is. However, I do believe that the Congress addressed it and did, in fact, say you do have the right to one motion to reopen. In particular, when the government's position is that the only reason this appellant does not have that right is because he's outside of the jurisdiction. Further in the statute at 8 U.S.C. 1229 C7C, dealing with victims of domestic violence, the Congress specifically stated.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement, and the Court will be in recess until tomorrow.